All right, just for a bit of fun, we're tuning in live to the He Will Not Divide Us camera.
Save a tree, burn a book. Save a tree, burn a book.
All right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday. What the hell is today? Like the 26th? Yeah, Thursday the 26th, 2017. I'm more interested to show about stuff like this is the show about stuff that interests me, like my current inability to speak, information security, and making fun of people who make it way too easy. I'm Morps. Tonight, I have Madman. Madman, what are you up to?
I am watching anime on Netflix and drinking, but I've turned Netflix off because we decided to do a show. So now I'm just drinking. It's kind of sad and pathetic.
Well,
before it was pathetic and nerdy.
I'm not even drinking tonight, man. So, it doesn't matter. Anyways, I was stretching and trying to find more of those stupid protest clips, and I can't find them. Protest library, no, I can't find the other one. I thought I had another one that was like them chanting books are bad, they make you mad or something like that. I can't find it. So, anyways, doesn't matter. We'll tune back in later to the They Will Not Divide Us camera if I find another sound clip that I find amusing enough to do so. Let's just check, see if there's... No, we're not doing it. Never mind. Zycros is mopping yet again, which means he's listening to us from across the room on his phone. Awesome. All right, so first article I have for tonight for a discussion here. This is from the Register, you know, that bastion of truth, but interesting anyways. Apparently Dropbox screwed up. So Dropbox says it was responsible for an attempted bug fix that instead caused old deleted data to reappear on the site. Oops. You know, shit people thought was deleted? Yeah, it just, like, showed up again.
Everyone dumps their wastebasket onto the internet.
A worker said last week that while trying to address a bug that had caused some old files to reappear, someone at Dropbox instead set a huge archive of old information to be visible, causing even more deleted content to reappear. Typically, we permanently remove files and folders from our servers within 60 days of a user deleting them. However, the deleted files and folders impacted by this bug had metadata inconsistencies, Dropbox employee Ross S. said on the company support forum. So we quarantined and then excluded them from the permanent deletion process until the metadata could be fixed. If you're going to delete it, wait a minute. If you're going to delete these files permanently, why do you care what's in the metadata? Dropbox noted the data was only visible to the accounts of the users, and at no time did any third party have access to the exposed files. After users have been complaining that old files, some more than half a decade in the past, had been showing up. Several different folders of old files from 2009 2011 deleted years ago, but suddenly reappearing overnight, wrote one user. And I definitely haven't connected to an old computer either. 2 days ago, a folder mysteriously appeared in my Dropbox. Sometime later, a subfolder was added, and a Word file added noted another. The folder and the file there were mine, but had been deleted years ago. While Dropbox said it had fixed the glitch, the restored files were left visible. Users could manually remove them for a few days. Dropbox on Sunday began automatically removing the files. Some users are still reporting old files reappearing, suggesting that Dropbox has not yet fully cleaned up the mess. Also, by the way, Dropbox keeps your old shit. Everyone completely missing the point of the story. Dropbox is saving your old shit. if you upload it to Dropbox and then you delete it, they still have it. Kind of a no duh for most of these cloud services, but still, it's kind of blatant. You know what I mean? It's like really obvious when they're accidentally putting old stuff that you've deleted back in your folder.
You never know when they need to comply with a CSA warrant. I said CSA. An NSA warrant.
Well, I mean, it's just like they even said at one point, they used to have press releases, oh no, if you delete your data, it's gone. We're not keeping your stuff. Yeah, they are.
Well, if it's more than 5 years old, they might have possibly forgot to save it, but I'm not going to say it's gone. Apparently, they could still accidentally retrieve it.
They used to actually say, no, we're not keeping your old stuff. When you delete it, it's gone after 60 days or something like that. That's what their policy is. And yet, they have shit going back to 2009.
Oh, if I were a user, I would really be pissed if I ever called them up. I was like, hi, can I get this back? I accidentally deleted it. And they're like, no, it's gone after how many ever days. And I see shit 5 years old. I'm like, you fucking liars.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
You won't help me when I accidentally screw up and hit delete. But you'll keep my crap. Thank you.
Well, it's actually not that surprising that they keep some of the old data, because one of the big pluses of their service is versioning. So if you're keeping like a Word document or something in a Dropbox and you accidentally delete it, you've got 6 days to get it back. You can go back to old versions of it. There are some real advantages to that kind of a service, just in, you know, not losing your shit, especially if you're prone to, say, fucking up your Word files. But at the same time, you know, you kind of expect when you delete something that it's gone. And if you had something in your Dropbox that, say, you weren't particularly proud of, well, that Dropbox has blackmail material.
Okay, you don't cloud storage any of your blackmailable material. The Fappening should have taught anyone that didn't already know that simple, you know, lesson. And that eventually, if you're a celebrity and you have nudes, there will be millions of people fapping to them. So, two things that should have been learned from that.
Well, it does raise the question of, if you're going to store shit in a cloud service, you probably should encrypt it. And that will, I think that would break the versioning that a lot of their, well, maybe not. Because you just get back the old version that was encrypted. So you'd have to unencrypt it, but you know, I guess it would depend on how you're encrypting. And if you're doing file level encryption, yeah, you could probably get the old versions back. But if you've got like a Veracrypt disk image in there, and you try to get old versions of it back, I don't actually know what that would do. I've not tried it. I guess it depends on how their system works and whether it would, like, restore... if it would restore the entire encrypted disk, or if it's trying to do, like, change tracking, because they've probably got it built on top of a SAN that's trying to do the, you know, just tracking the diffs. So I suppose the system, it should work, but... Now I'm kind of curious to try that. Drop an encrypted disk in there and try rolling it back versions and seeing if it breaks stuff. That actually might be an experiment worth doing.
That could be a digital dojo in the future.
That could be a digital dojo in the future. Although I was really disappointed that you couldn't really host anything more than simple JavaScript web pages in Dropbox, because I always thought it'd be fun to set up like a, I don't know, other type of servers in there. But yes, Cycros is saying in the chat room, back in 2009 we were still using Second Life and listening to rant radio shows. Actually, I did use Dropbox back then. I used to use it to host stuff for scripts in Second Life, for like sound clips and media files on land and shit like that. So God, that was a long time ago.
Just know, if you're giving your information to a third party, it's no longer secret and probably no longer secure.
If you have, so like things like Office 365 and Amazon, they've got some pretty gnarly legal agreements when it comes to ownership of the data. And when I say gnarly, they're confusing, because basically you're renting space from them. and they're set up such as that. You know, you're not called, it's not called a service. You're actually called, they actually create what's called a tenant for you in Office 365, for example. So they treat it more like a storage unit. You know what I mean? Or like renting a house. They don't treat it like a service like Dropbox does. So, you know, some of these cloud services, they really go out of their way to set this stuff up right. But at the same time, because they're set up that way, well, if you have an apartment full of really expensive shit and it burns down, the landlord isn't going to reimburse you for your shit. It's set up that way for a reason. It's an indemnification against data loss or something, and Amazon's used that several times in arguments because of people losing data in S3 or losing control of access keys on GitHub and shit like that. So, yeah, it was services like Dropbox. Well, okay, I guess a better way to put it. Amazon and Office 365 cloud services aren't free. You are paying for them. The product is what you are, you know, what you, they are providing to you, the person paying them and setting up services. Dropbox has a freebie platform. Now, you can pay for more storage, but how are they making their money if, say, 90% of their users are just using the freebie platform?
They're scanning your stuff and probably, hopefully, just marketing to you, because that's the least horrible thing I can think of.
That,
but you are the product.
Yes.
You are the product. Whenever you're not paying for it, then you're not buying a service.
Now, Dropbox
is providing
you
a service to someone.
They'll tell you it's an upsell trying to get you to buy their premium service, which, okay, but I don't know how many people actually pay for the premium service. But a lot of the, like the file locker sites, like the Mega Uploads and the Mediafire and stuff like that, same concept. You throw all your files up there. Most people are using the free service. Not a lot of people are paying for it. You know, you got to think they're doing something else to make their money. So obviously the end users are the product here, not the other way around. So just something to be aware of when you're evaluating whether you want to use the service or not. So, and things like Dropbox, you just have to assume anything you throw in there is, you could lose control of, even if the company isn't doing anything wrong. They get hacked, or maybe your account gets hacked. That's actually what I was more concerned about when I first started playing around with Dropbox, is, well, somebody figuring out how to get into my account. I wasn't even concerned about Dropbox at that point. I was just concerned about somebody figuring out a password and getting into it and deleting shit or something. So I've made it a point to never store anything all that important in Dropbox. Just, you know, files I want to move around, or, you know, stuff of no consequence. How about that? Although I was using it for decking notes for a while. That was pretty handy. You know, oh no, somebody's going to get my collection of links that I publish for free on the internet once a week anyways. I mean, you know, so you kind of want to, you kind of got to do that risk analysis there and go, is this something I really want to use or not? And just be aware that Dropbox is keeping your stuff long after you delete it. Oh, obviously, I mean, 2009?
I wonder how much that's costing them. And just
not nearly
storage.
As much as you think. When you get into high-end storage, SANS, yeah, a SANS system is expensive to you or I, but when you're looking at IT infrastructure, storage is cheap, dude.
Yeah, it's like, I know it's tiered pricing. Once you get into the tier, it's how much more before you actually move up to the next tier, and that's your cost increase.
Well, usually SANS are sold, like you'll buy the actual SAN, and Cycross is like, the real question is, did they undelete the old IHN episodes? I don't know. You'd have to ask Suave that one, because I don't have all of them. Or Lore, he'd probably have them. I don't think he would have put them in Dropbox, though. Back in the day, dude, we were FTPing those things around, so I don't think anybody was actually using Dropbox to move IHN episodes. Sorry.
Oh, no. That's a search we've got to do on Dropbox now.
See if they show up. Yeah, that's possible. But no, man, SANs, which are, you know, your high-end storage infrastructure, you're paying a license fee, or not a license fee, it's a support contract is what they call them. But Yeah, the NSA all just has them under a label of assholes. it's like, we might need to keep this handy, but we're not certain. So anyways, you get a support contract for the SAN, and that's usually what you call the head unit, which is kind of the computer that runs the thing, and then you buy trays or blades, whatever the company is marketing them as, but basically it'll be a box that you put a bunch of disks in, and you connect that to the main computer depending on... different ones use different hookup methods. Some old school ones used to use SCSI cables. This day and age, you see a lot of fiber channel, or some will have their own kind of proprietary hookups. Some actually use Ethernet, just use 10 gig Ethernet on the backplane. So it depends on the different SAN, and they're all hooked up differently. So the ones I've seen, I've seen the ones that use fiber channel, and I've seen ones that use proprietary hookups. So, and yeah, I have seen one that uses Ethernet before. So. Now, it was supposed to be on its own, it was on its own switch system. It wasn't, like, part of the main network. It had its own entire infrastructure just to hook the SAN up. But that's, you know, that's the stuff you got to design if you're going to play in that space. So, you know, just stuff to be aware of. But anyway, so yeah, like, trays of disks, once you're into that infrastructure, they're cheap. Comparatively, like, you know, you buy a couple terabytes for, I don't know, $1,000 kind of thing. So... And this isn't, when I say $1,000, I mean, this isn't like, you know, just going down to Best Buy and getting a couple terabytes of drives. I mean, this is like, you know, four or five layers of disk and all different storage, usually SAS or high-end data and, you know, all flash. it's not cheap, but comparatively it's cheap, if that makes sense. So... For the infrastructure game, it's cheap. How about that? So
yeah, it's economies of scale. The more you can buy, the cheaper each individual unit costs.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, anyways, let's move on here. Because I mean, I'm actually talking about fucking SANs on a podcast. I think it's time to move on to the next story. But, nerd. Anyways, the first story I have in events tonight is from CNBC. They're about on the same level as the Register there. So let's see. Google has banned 200 publishers since it passed a new policy against fake news. Google kicked 200 publishers off one of its ad networks in the fourth quarter, partially responsible for the proliferation of fake news sites. The company banned the publishers from its AdSense network, an ad placement service that automatically serves text and displays ads on participating sites based on its audience. The ban was part of an update to an existing policy that prohibits sites that mislead users with their content. God, that's broad. Google regularly weeds out advertisers for false or misleading claims, but impersonating news sites became an addition following the rapid rise of fake news or propaganda websites. After the election, Google was... blasted for placing a fake news false story from a fake news site claiming Donald Trump had won the popular vote. He had 2.8 million fewer votes than Hillary Clinton. Thank you, California. Not all 200 publishers were swept up as part of the effort to root out fake news. Publishers were banned in November and December and included sites that impersonate real news organizations through shortened top-level domains. According to Google's 2016 Bad Ads Report, normally released at the beginning of each year. The so-called fake news publishers will sometimes take advantage of the .co domains by appearing legitimate or by appearing similar to news sites that would normally end in .com. Oh, so they're domain squatting and then, you know, look like a real news site but have Google ads all over it and silly stories. Google declined to provide a listing of the banned sites. Separately, the annual report of violations on advertising policy also included data on ads removed by Google. The company reported that in 2016, it took down 1.7 billion ads for violations compared to 780 million in 2015. God, that's got to be a sucky job. The guy who sits there and reads the ads and decides... I mean... you know... That's
like,
gotta be a
you can't
sucky
sell
job.
A box of farts. That's an illegitimate ad.
Wait a minute. Is this the guys who did Cards Against Humanity? Because they would actually sell a box of farts. They sold a box of cow shit.
People bought a box of cow shit. That's
yes,
the amazing
they did.
They had to go out and find him a newer salesman.
Nobody thought they were actually going to sell them a box of cow shit. So they were all, you know, it's like, I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't a box of cow shit, despite the label. Google attributes the increase in ad removals to a combination of advertiser behavior and improvements in technology to detect offending ads. Added a policy mid-year to prohibit ads for payday loans considered predatory. Roughly 5 million payday loan ads were disabled over the latter 6 months. Also among these removed ads was what Google called tabloid cloakers. These advertisers run what looks like links to news headlines, but when the user clicks the ad for a product, such as weight loss supplement, pops up. They suspended 1,300 accounts engaged in tabloid cloaking. So,
yeah, that's cool.
Okay. Google is a private company. I don't believe Alphabet is publicly traded, is it? I don't think it is. I think they're still completely private. Now I don't know. Fuck.
Google? Yeah. I thought Google was publicly traded.
Is it?
Check. Ask Google. Google, are you publicly traded?
Oh, it's okay. Alphabet is publicly traded. So, yes. Google created a parent company that is actually the publicly traded company. Google's a subsidiary. So, okay.
Well, even if it's publicly traded, it's still a private company. The difference
yeah,
between public and private is whether or not the government owns it.
Yeah. They can do whatever they want with their ad networks. I just, whenever you say, we're banning fake news, how are you defining fake news? That's I don't care that you're doing it. I just want to know how you're defining it. It's like, how do you define fake news? They said vote for Trump. That doesn't mean it's fake. It means it's fake news. Oh, my God. You know, it's like, and we're back to watching the fucking He Will Not Divide Us camera.
The domain squatters? That's
oh, absolutely.
Cool. I just think
that's
they
bullshit.
Should list that. Like, if it's CNN.co, that's somebody pretending to be CNN.
Yeah, that's fine.
Ban them. But they should list who they're banning, and then we know, are you banning people because they're putting out stories that are untrue, which is fine, or are you banning them because they're putting out stories that you don't agree with, which is crap, and then we can just judge.
Yeah, that's all I want, is I want a definition of fake news. How are you defining it? Because if you're going to say, well, we're going to ban Breitbart because we think Breitbart's fake news, well, a lot of people get news from Breitbart, and you could make an argument that they've got a lot of backing for their stories. You could also argue that they go way over the top with some of their stories. But if you're going to just, you know, any organization that ever makes mistakes... CNN?
CNN, NBC, all of them have published things that were wrong.
Very wrong. So, I mean, if it's a blatant bullshit, you know, website impersonating a news site, okay. But, again, how are you defining fake news? Because if you're going to get all political about it and just block anything you don't like, it's going to get weird quick. Or, well, I mean, Trump... Oh, Cypress beat me to it in the chat. Yeah, it's going to say Trump called one of them fake news. It was CNN. So,
he called CNN fake news because they were going with the BuzzFeed story.
Yeah.
And to the credit, they did say the BuzzFeed story was crap, and they were bringing out specifics in the BuzzFeed story that were from other stories as well. But at that, you have to get into the minutia. CNN could be crap. I haven't actually looked at the article that they put out. It might have been better sourced and have other corroborating things. But just a blanket ban things, if you're going to do a ban and you want to keep the public trust, which is what Google's issue is with this, is can everyone trust them? Be open with who you're banning, and when possible, say why.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to ban, you know, just political news from a political side you don't agree with, that's a problem. And I don't know. That's my fear, is that they're going to use this not for, you know, fake news, but for censorship. So.
Well, and there's a flip side to this, which isn't really covered in this story, but It's not just censorship, it's selective news. And Google's doing this, and so is Facebook. They're not doing it to be malicious. They're trying to just get you to click on shit. But whenever their algorithms are working, they don't need to feed me just stuff that I'm already looking at, because that's just building my own echo chamber. Sometimes they should throw in, if you have a news feed, here's a credible news source that's looking at a story from a different angle. Whereas facts don't care about your feelings, there are twists in stories that where the facts are still the same. They're just looking at it at a different angle, which will bring up different conclusions.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's just gets back to my point. Every time you hear about these websites banning fake news, they never define how they're defining fake news, and I just wish they would. All right, next one up is from Torrent Freak. Researchers are issuing security warnings over Android VPN apps. A research team has issued a warning over the lack of security in many VPN apps available from Google Play, a worrying 38% of the apps tested contained some kind of malware. You know, the thing you're using to avoid malware? That's got malware in it. While 67% featured at least one third-party tracking library, defeating the entire point of the VPN. More than 8 out of 10 leaked IPv6 traffic. Okay, that's just a technical glitch. There was a time when the internet was a fairly straightforward place to navigate with basic software, basic websites, and few major security issues. Over the years, things have drastically changed. Many people now spend their entire lives connected to the web in some way, particularly via mobile devices and apps such as Facebook and the countless thousands of others now freely available online. Speaking of being connected, there will be no decking the next 2 weeks. I am going out of the country, I think is the politically correct way to state it. So, yeah, the van's outside. They've got the black bag ready for me. They told me they fixed the air holes this time. So, yeah, 2 weeks. We'll see what happens. Something about a reprogramming. I don't know.
Look at the upside. If it's waterboarding, you can call it Sears training and have something for your memos or memoirs.
Sears training?
Yes. It's when we waterboard our own people. That actually happened.
Why did we name it after the department store?
It's an acronym for some crap. Static could tell you what.
Okay, well, we'll talk to Static later.
But I also think it's because it's from the military. They probably were fapping off to the lingerie section.
Oh, yeah, that's what we got to do at the next meetup. The Galaxy 15 waterboarding. See who lasts long enough. And then RU shows up with the hot sauce. What the fuck, dude?
Gotta be pepper sprayed while waterboarding.
Wait a minute. I thought we were just doing waterboarding here. Let's see. Many people now spend their entire lives connected to the web in some way, particularly via mobile devices and apps such as Facebook and the countless thousands of others now freely available online. Okay, don't use the actual Facebook app. Use one of the replacement apps. The Facebook app, through all the damn tracking it does, runs your battery down. Like, you can find tons of people complaining about both their iPhones and Androids, the Facebook app just murdering the battery. And it's got to be all the tracking and bullshit it does. For some users, the idea of encrypting their traffic has become attractive, both from a security and an anti-censorship standpoint. On the other hand, people like the idea of private communications, and on the other, encryption can enable people to bypass website blocks, wherever they may occur, and for whatever reason. As a result, millions are now turning to premium VPN packages from reputable companies. Others, however, prefer to use the all-in-one options available in Google's Play Store, but according to a new study, that could be a risky strategy. The study, a study by researchers at CSIRO's Data 61 University of New South Wales and UC Berkeley, has found that hundreds of VPN apps available from Google Play presented significant security issues, including malware, spyware, adware, and data leaks. Very often, users look at the number of downloads combined with a star rating of apps to work out whether they're getting a good product. However, the researchers found that among the 283 apps tested, even the highest-ranked and most downloaded apps contained nasty surprises. While 37% of analyzed VPN apps had more than 500K installs, and 25% of them received at least a 4-star rating, 38% of them contained some malware presence, according to VirusTotal, the researchers write. The five types of malware detected can be broken down as follows. 43% had adware, 29% had trojans, 17% had malvertising, 6% had riskware and 5% had spyware. The researchers ordered the most problematic app, SpyVirus Total AV Rank, which represents the number of antivirus totals that identify malware activity. OKVPN had 24, EasyVPN had 22, SuperVPN had 13, BetterNet had 13, CrossVPN had 11, ArchieVPN had 10. Archie? Who the hell comes up with these names? HatVPN had 10, SFly Network Booster had 10, OneClick had 6, Fast Secure Payment had 5. Researchers found that only a marginal number of VPN users raised any security or privacy concerns in the review sections of each app. That's because they're paid for. Despite many of them having serious problems, the high number of downloads seem to suggest that users have confidence in them despite their issues. Or the app makers just paid for their reviews. There was a fantastic photo on the Cyberpunk subreddit a couple of weeks back of a Chinese woman sitting in front of this table made of smartphones.
Clicking like.
Yeah, just click farming, basically. But it's just like, oh my god. And it's like, that's what they're doing with all the prepaid phones and all the old used phones that they ship off. Like, you go send them in to recycle them, they're getting sold to these companies that are taking old phones and just turning them into click farms. And it's cheaper to pay somebody to sit there and work 50 phones than it is to actually write the automation software, which is mind-boggling. So, according to the number of installs of these apps, millions of users appear to trust VPN apps despite their potential maliciousness. In fact, the high presence of malware activity in VPN apps that our analysis has revealed is worrisome given the ability that these apps already have to inspect and analyze all users' traffic with the VPN permission. The growing awareness of VPNs and their association with privacy and security has been a hot topic in recent years. Blah, 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 blah. Instead of looking for a VPN, users have to carry out their own research online. Sticking with well-known companies that are transparent about their practices is a great start. And if an app requests access to sensitive data during the install, for no good reason, get rid of it. If it's a free app with a free service included, it's a fair assumption that strings are attached. Yeah, this goes back to what we were talking about before. If there's no price tag on it, you are the product. And you just have to decide whether you're okay with that or not.
I would like to point out that this story also proved my point that automation will not put humans out of work. No one a decade ago thought click farming would be a viable job.
Yeah, but you gotta live in the third world, and I think you probably get paid like $1 a day or some bullshit.
Yeah, it's better than whatever the fuck else you was gonna do.
Probably.
I didn't say it was a good job. I said everyone will have employment.
What is your job? Pick up that can. Okay, congratulations, you've done your job for the week. We've rotated it out. We have zero unemployment. Some people only work an hour a day, but we have zero unemployment.
But are there good free VPNs?
Yes, well, not free. There are good VPN clients, and but generally with VPNs, if they're free, they're generating money either by inserting ads or tracking your usage. Because they have to operate somehow. You've got to pay for the servers. So that's something with a very, very real cost. You can't – like, I mean, okay, I might be able to spin up a couple of hundred. I'd have to – the only other way to do it would be to steal service somehow. And there are companies that do that like, they go – they have a dirty tricks team that basically goes and hacks into machines and then uses those to set up VPN services coming out of their systems, or they're like Tor clients. There are open source VPN clients, but again, it's got to have somewhere to bounce out of. So one thing you can do with a lot of the open source stuff is you could set up your own VPN server at home, especially if you have a higher end router that supports it, or if you have an open source firmware on your router. A lot of time those will add support for it. Or you can run the server behind the router if you know what you're doing. You can Google that. They're not that hard to set up.
Then just bounce your phone through your home computer.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine any of the open source VPN clients, you probably can find tutorials for doing that. And yeah, you're bouncing through your own home computer, and at that point you are your own VPN.
And if your home computer is secure, then you're probably fine.
Or your router or whatever you're using as a VPN concentrator. Again, I mean, there are 100 ways to do this crap. I know guys who, they don't bother with VPNs. They just SSH tunnel everything. And like, for all practical purposes, virtual networks set up over SSH tunnels. So, you know, hey, there's all kinds of stuff you can do. But, and again, Psychros beat me to it in the chat room. I look over and he's already talking about what I was talking about. So poor man's VPN, he's bouncing to his desktop via SSH. That's awesome. Yeah, so this problem's been solved before, like, a lot. So if you're looking for free VPN, you're going to need to use open source software and bounce it back home. And it'll come out of your home machine, so you probably won't get the anonymity, but you can at least add a layer of security to your communications and make it at least as secure as your home network. You could potentially get like a El Cheapo Amazon AWS server or a DigitalOcean droplet and set up a VPN concentrator up there to bounce your traffic through. That usually works. The other way to do stuff like that is to pay for it. There are several. I see TunnelBear advertised a lot. Never actually used that one, but it's got good reviews. I personally like private internet access, although their website's a little clip art happy. A lot of the pictures on the website look like they just went on like the clip art CDs from the 90s. But the service is good, and they don't keep logs. So that's one I personally use and I like. There's a few others floating around out there. There's a... Tor VPN, which... No, it's not Tor VPN. Torrent Friend or something like that. There's a couple of different ones floating around. Pirate Bay was running one for a while. So... You know, there's several of them out there, but just be aware that if you're going to have to pay for it if you want a good VPN. And if you're using some weird site, you know, some weird VPN app you found on Google Play that's only half written in English, well, just you're kind of
Chinesium explodes.
Now, to be fair, I've only seen Chinesium circuits catch fire 3 times, most of which in relation to a 3D printer. Now that I think on it, that's not the point. Anyways, Psychros is saying check out proxy.sh. Not played with that one. I might. Like I said, I've been pretty happy with private internet access. So, and again, you don't. It's situational. You just gotta do a little bit of research, do a little bit of reading, and just understand that free apps you find in Google Play that seem like they're too good to be true usually are. I've played with a couple of Bitcoin apps. In Google Play that are ultimately all designed to get you to generate all kinds of ad income for the person running the app, and you almost never get paid out. So, again, just something to keep in mind. Next article is from AndroidPolice.com. There we go. Gmail will not allow JavaScript file attachments starting February the 13th. Malicious emails often attach various forms of executable programs to trick users into running them. These include standard Windows executables like a .exe, a .bat file, and even JavaScript. Starting on February 13th, Google will not allow JS files to be sent as an attachment, including JS files detected within archives. If you're not familiar with web development, JavaScript is a common language used when developing web applications, and JS files are often loaded as part of web pages. However, opening an unknown JS file on Windows can be dangerous, as it runs inside the Windows scripting host by default, which, by the way, is how Locky spreads. For anybody who doesn't know, Locky is a crypto ransomware that runs in fucking .NET, and it runs out of the Windows scripting host. And from there, scripts can easily run Windows executables. While blocking .js attachments is a step in the right direction, it is unclear if any warnings will be shown when receiving emails with .js files attached. This is cool. I'd like to see more email providers getting a little bit more aggressive about blocking executables through email, blocking malware, and just flat out blocking things in email. You know, you've got so many people who lose their shit over email, but it's down to, you know, look, this stuff's an epidemic, and the only way you're going to get any semblance of security in email anymore is to either run completely invoke-only private systems that do not connect to the internet, or, you know, you've got to do massive amounts of filtering and just deal with the fact that if you're trying to send something through and the filters catch it, it's not going to get through.
Email would work for internal businesses, but kills the idea of email.
Which is, you just have to assume that there's nothing. You either assume it's text only, you know, set it to text only, or block attachments, block pretty much anything that's got script in it, because it's, I don't know about anybody else who deals with this shit, but I'm so fucking tired of email. Every fucking week it's something else with the fucking email, and it's always related to either something's getting blocked or something is not getting blocked. And as soon as somebody invents the psychic email filter so you can detect intent, let me know, because I'm getting tired of answering questions like, well, why'd this email get through? Because it was one line and a link. Why'd you click it? Like, well, they said I needed my password. No, they didn't. They were lying. People do that? People just go on the internet and lie? Yes! Well, why didn't you block that? Because I have no way of knowing that they were lying. All it was a fucking link. But people are stupid. So, yeah. And I'm tired of it. So anytime you see big web internet email providers going nuts with the filtering and getting more restrictive, right now I think it's a good thing, because I am so tired of cleaning up email messes.
But he said I won $1 million.
Then you deserve what happens to you.
I don't remember ever, you know, entering in anything to win anything, but it said I won, and I'm special and deserve to win. Yeah. Or you can go with my company's policy, get everyone so scared of phishing emails they click nothing.
That's the correct answer. It's such a constant fight, because I've got so many users who are just absolutely retarded. Like, I clicked a phishing email, and I gave him a password. Cool, we're changing your password. Next week. So my email got hacked. So last week, when we had you change your password. Oh, yeah, that was annoying, so I put it back to what it was. How? We don't let you use the last 7 passwords. Yeah, I had to change it 8 times, but I put it back to what it was. But you clicked a phishing email. Well, that's why I had you reset it. Oh, my God. You honestly don't realize what just happened.
You do know that everyone knows that password that you're using right now.
But that's why you changed it. But you changed it back. But you changed it. That doesn't change the fact that you changed it back and they now know it. Oh, my God. And this is mostly a real conversation.
I know, because I've had similar ones with people.
Like, they give away the password and they have you reset it because it got hacked, and then they change it back. Well, you changed it so it's not hacked anymore. No, that's not how information works.
Sir, if I tell you 2 + 2 = 4, if I decide now 2 + 2 = 5, and then I tell you 2 + 2 = 4 again, what does 2 + 2 =?
It means, why did my email get hacked? It's like, fuck, come on.
Because you're not allowed to use computers anymore. The computers are dangerous. If it needs to be secured, you need to send it by courier. You are the only person in the office, but you have to send everything by courier now.
Psychros, I'm not drinking tonight, but I've been drinking all week. I'm going to go get drunk on a boat, because fuck. I'm specifically... So one of the reasons there's not going to be any decking for the next couple of weeks is because I'm going someplace without cell phone coverage. Oh, because I'm so sick of this. I'm so sick of every other day something with fucking email. And it's usually a question that doesn't make any sense. Like, your spam filter blocked a bunch of stuff. Can you just release that? No, it's gone. It was blocked. It was denied. Well, I need you to release those emails. Well, no, you're not understanding. There's nothing to release. It's gone. Yeah, can you just resend those for me? And I don't have them to send. You have to do that. So you're going to resend them then. What part of I don't have them do you not understand? Okay, thanks. What the fuck? And then later you get asked why you didn't resend that email for them by your boss because they called your boss to complain that you couldn't do the impossible. It's like, what the fuck?
Time travel wasn't invented yet, sir. The moment it is, I will get this fixed, I swear.
So, I actually have a report, an automated report, that says tasks requiring a time machine. Because it's comparing the due date entered by a user into the web form with the actual date the task was entered.
I can't schedule things for the past.
I don't understand why it's set up that way, but the group that owns it doesn't want to change it, so I will get tickets that were due a week ago, and it's you know, so I then get asked why these didn't get done, and it's like, well, if you look at the creation date, it's because they didn't ask for it till a week after it was due. Well, right, but it has a due date of, okay, when you figure out time travel, let me know. Psychros is suggesting I go back into food service. I've done food service before. I don't want to do food service.
Depends on what. I'm still wanting to do a brewery pizzeria. I know they've been done here now, but when I first had the idea, there wasn't one around here, and I could do it better.
You know, I haven't get... He said Trump's about to make a ton of openings when all the Mexicans get deported. Oh, virtual fist bump, Psychros. That is hilarious. Oh, God.
All right. I know we're 55 minutes into the show. Where the hell's the IRC link?
It's under feedback. Yeah, I got to redesign the web page. It's a mess right now, and it's been a mess since last February. So we're coming up on a year since I screwed it up. That's awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I need to get back into beer brewing. I could do a brewery. I haven't done beer brewing in a while, though. I still have all the equipment. Anyways, next article is from The Verge. Let's see. Where was this? Microsoft submitted a major legal victory today. What's today for this article? January the 24th. So this is 2 days ago. Microsoft submitted a major legal victory as a federal... appeals court declined to hear the government's appeal in a landmark cloud computing case. The government sought to search data stored on Microsoft servers in Ireland as part of a U.S. drug case. We've been talking about this story for years, arguing the servers were still subject to a U.S. warrant laws. A lower court dismissed the government's case in July, and today en banc ruling means that the ruling will not be overturned. The ruling is the ruling is a significant precedent as U.S. courts seek to reconcile legal borders with the international logic of cloud computing. Although the case was brought by U.S. law enforcement and the crime likely took place within the U.S., data center logistics made it most efficient for Microsoft to store the data in Ireland. Today's ruling means police won't be able to use the stored communication acts to reach that data, and it's unclear what other U.S. law might be employed in its place. In the years since that case was first tried, law enforcement has employed a number of measures to prevent similar impasses. Last year, the U.S. began negotiations on a mutual legal assistance treaty in which the United Kingdom, which would allow U.S. warrants to be served overseas, although such a treaty would not apply to servers in Ireland. A number of countries have also passed data localization laws requiring certain data to be stored within national borders. Reached for comment, Microsoft President and Chief Legal Officer Brad Smith applauded the ruling. We welcome today's decisions, said Smith in a statement. We need Congress to modernize the law, both to keep people safe and ensure governments everywhere respect each other's borders. Notably, Smith framed the ruling as a specific call for new laws to clarify the issue of extraterritorial access. The decision puts the focus on where it belongs, on Congress passing a law for the future rather than litigation about an outdated statute from the past. That's probably a good opinion to have. So,
the way they do it is they go to Ireland, we have this warrant, and we look at the crap, and they ask Ireland for it. And then they decide whether we have a case and issue a warrant in their country. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I don't like this idea that, oh, well, you have a presence in this country, therefore we can, you know, you're, anything you could potentially touch in the other country, we can get after. It's like, borders don't work that way. So I, at the time, I didn't like the case. I don't like the idea of somebody getting away with something for a technicality. You know, if somebody's breaking the law and it's a real law that they're breaking, not, I don't know, some bullshit. I don't even know what a good example would be on a copyright case or something. you know, you can't issue warrants for somebody else's servers. I mean, it didn't work. Kind of wish it – actually, it would be kind of cool to be able to get, like, some of the Russia bullshit shut down and some of the China bullshit shut down for botnets and the like. But I don't think that those servers are actually being ran by people inside of Russia or China. I think those just happen to be where they're set up because it's easy. But, I mean, hell. I was cleaning out a data center one time and found a Taiwanese VPN running out of it. So, I mean, you know, it's like, well, I've traced it back as far as it can go, but I can't read it anymore, so I don't know. I don't know what to do about it at this point. So, I mean, you know, hell. But, yeah, and because of things like this, you are going to see more and more. And Russia passed it. Several EU countries passed it, where they basically said to companies like Facebook, look, if you're going to have – you're going to have to keep data for users on local servers. The only problem with that is you get into – I mean, for big sites, it makes sense because especially if they have data centers over there. You know, you can assume Microsoft is going to have – email servers in the EU. They're going to have email servers in various countries. Although in Europe, I guess you could get away with not having, like, you might have a data center in France, but not Germany. And you could get away with that because, you know, the distance isn't that terrible.
Oh, no. It's like having a data center in Illinois and not one in Indiana.
Yeah. I mean, but of course, the EU makes that interesting. But, you know, I can kind of see that, but at the same time, for something like G15 Radio, if we offered, I don't know, a forum or something, and I had the French authorities or whoever, I don't know what all countries have actually passed that law, saying that, oh, no, you have to keep, I know Russia has, so, you know, you have a Russian user on the forum, so Russia says, no, you got to store the Russian user's data on a Russian server. Well, I'd have to block Russia because I can't afford to set up another server in Russia right now.
The answer's no, I don't.
Yeah.
You can block my site, but I don't live there. I don't have to do what you say.
That's a good point, yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the Pirate Bay, all the letters of people getting DMCA complaint letters from the Pirate Bay saying, you have to do this. And it's like, no, we don't. We're in Sweden.
Yeah.
That's an American law.
That's the answer. No, I don't. Now, just like with the Pirate Bay, U.S. authorities can go to Sweden and be like, hi, can we do X? And then Sweden will be like, no, or yes.
Well, the weird thing is they did that to Kim.com. So you'd think they'd be able to do it for other countries, for other things.
You can. That's what the whole idea behind extradition. We're going to a country and asking them to give us someone. It works with warrants as well. You go to the country, you ask them, can I have this? Here's my reasoning, here's my evidence. And either the country believes that you're right and does it, or they say, it's not illegal here, we don't care.
That
or
is...
we don't believe your evidence, we also don't care.
I think at this point it just comes down to, that's a pain in the ass, they should just accept whatever we tell them to do. You know that's what it is.
Oh, I know that's what they're thinking. It's like, this could take years to get a country to involve, to agree with this. And instead of spending those years asking the country. They've been spending the years trying to make it where, in future cases, they don't have to ask the country.
So, this next article is from digitaltrends.com. St. Louis library system refused to pay ransomware, which is cool. Just Say No worked for the St. Louis, Missouri public library systems. On January 19, 2016, a ransomware attack took down circulation and public access computers at all 17 branches. The hackers demanded a $35,000 ransom to free up the 700-plus computers. Rather than roll over and pay, however, the library fought back, and Monday, June 23rd, most services were back up and running, according to ThreatPost. When the ransomware attack struck, the first thing the library did was contact the FBI. The library IT staff used system and data backups to restore the affected servers after fully wiping them. And on January 20th, a core circulation system was restored and book checkouts were back in operation at all branches by January the 21st. On January 23rd, the last remaining node, the reserve system, was the only part of the library's computer system not fully operational, and that was expected shortly. According to St. Louis Public Library Executive Director Waller McGuire, the source of the attack was not through email phishing, the most common ransomware infection vector. In a letter to patrons, McGuire said the malware was installed via a network break-in, though the exact point of entry is not known. The ransomware software used in the attack is also unknown at this time. Well, honestly, it's probably somebody walked into one of the libraries and plugged a USB drive in.
Yeah, they're public use computers. I can walk into a public library and be like, oh, I want to use your computer.
Yep.
How often do the librarians check what you're doing? It doesn't take long to plug a USB in the back.
How many videos do you see online of like old men looking up porn in the middle of the library on the library computers? Believe me, nobody gives a shit. Somebody would just plugged in a flash drive, pulled it up, and ran it.
I do like that the library appears to have been prepared for that. It's like, we just have it backed up. We said, fuck them, and fixed our computer system.
And
that's the correct answer.
That is the correct answer. Do proper backups. Have a snapshotting system. You know, try to keep your users' data safe. And, you get ransomware, just restore from backup. This whole, we didn't have a backup, that's poor planning. Because it's not just ransomware. Machines die. Hard drives fail. You'll start hearing them making weird noises.
There could be a flood in your data
center. Your data center could be abducted by aliens. Either kind.
Oh, yeah, but when the Mexicans haul the computers back to Mexico, you can buy them back. They're just going to sell them to whoever's in Texas.
I was actually thinking Grays with sombreros. But, you know, hey, because we haven't been racist enough tonight on the show, so... Let's see. The St. Louis Public Library has been working with the FBI to identify how the criminals broke into our system and correct the problem, McGuire said. I apologize to patrons for any inconvenience this incident has caused. On most days, thousands of St. Louis Public Library patrons check out materials and use computers. I skipped over a paragraph. They said that no user data was compromised. I'm curious how they know that. Oh, because it's not actually stored. That is also the correct answer. Assure patrons their personal and financial data was not in jeopardy because it's not stored on library servers. The online circulation system for downloading books, movies, and music wasn't affected, nor is the library's Wi-Fi service. So, yeah, again, proper data segmentation. So it only got hit with the computer system servers. It didn't get any of the financial stuff. It sounds like this library actually had proper infrastructure.
Why in the world am I using Netflix? If you can stream stuff from your public library now, I already knew you could go in and get DVDs. I just am lazy, and I can hit play on Netflix instead of, you know, going to the library and checking shit out.
Well, the answer would be you're assuming the Netflix has things the library doesn't, but I don't know that. I don't know. Why aren't you streaming shit from the library?
I can't give you that answer because it's free if they do it because it's all taxpayer-funded. I'm already paying for it. Well, I guess it's technically not free. I'm already paying for it.
Now, many stories about ransomware and banks, hospitals, and then the payment of the ransom demands just to get things back up as soon as possible. According to the St. Law, according to the just recently, the Los Angeles Community College District paid a $28,000 ransom using cybersecurity insurance policy that covered the attack. Oh, you have shitty cybersecurity insurance if they paid it. Because, part of the point of cybersecurity insurance is not just the payment, but I'm assuming the cybersecurity insurance company is actually going to come in and do proper security audits so that they're not trying to secure somebody with, you know, I don't know, open Ethernet ports in the wall outside or something stupid. It's worth noting that St. Louis libraries were also able to get back online quickly, not just because the system had an IT staff, but because they also systematically back up their full systems, not just the data. Yes, snapshots. This allowed them to quickly wipe clean and restore the service promptly. Somebody at that library's IT department knew what the hell they were doing.
So, you know what's hilarious? A lot of those are just students at a college. Somebody just knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Somebody did proper infrastructure. That's awesome. And I wish more companies did it, because then this whole ransom thing just goes away. Because it's like, you know, you get one poorly set up shop. No. Most of them are just like, yeah, fuck off, and just restore their backups.
It's the polio vaccine of the internet.
Yeah. You get enough of them, the problem goes away. And people just don't do it. So let's check in with the camera again.
Save a tree, burn a book, save a tree.
Yeah, they're still doing that shit. Let's see. Next article is from express.co.uk and is hilarious. Kick-ass torrents warning. You have 20 days left to stop using torrents. Yeah.
No.
UK internet service providers are preparing to send out warning letters to subscribers whose accounts have been used to download copyrighted material from torrent sites. The emails are part of a new campaign called Get It Right. The campaign has a new website that provides answers to some of the most asked questions about torrents, peer-to-peer sharing, and copyrighted material. Notice this article doesn't tell you what they are. It's because this is a paid-for article. I'm positive. In an effort to lower piracy rates across the UK, leading internet service providers will send out emails from the Get It Right campaign to those who have downloaded copyrighted material online. The email cautions subscribers that they have 20 days to stop downloading copyrighted materials using peer-to-peer websites. Should your internet service provider detect more illegal activity from your IP address during the 20-day grace period, another educational email from the Get It Right campaign will be sent. I don't have it loaded on the soundboard. I was looking for the dramatic scroll that I was using last week. This will work. A similar campaign in the United States only offers torrent site users 7 days to comply. According to the campaign website, Get It Right educational email program is designed to educate consumers about what's happening on their internet service provider account. The program is to help make sure that they or people who use their connections are not infringing copyright, and to direct them to sources where they can get their content that they want from genuine sites and services, you know, where you got to pay for it. BTE, Now TV, PlusNet, Sky, TalkTalk, and Virgin Media are all signed up to the Get It Right campaign. Copyright owners are monitoring peer-to-peer sites to identify instances where their content is uploaded and shared without permission. The Get It Right campaign says you may receive periodic educational email alerts whenever content owners detect new copyright infringement activity through peer-to-peer networks, and the IP address associated with such activity is confirmed by your ISP to be associated with your account. After an educational email has been sent, there's a 20-day grace period during which time you will not receive any further emails. However, if further copyright infringement activity occurs and is detected after the 20-day grace period, you may receive another email from your ISP. If no further infringements occur and are detected and verified to be associated with your account, you will not receive any more educational emails. I love how it's capitalized too. It's like titles. It's like the title, educational email. It's like, does educational email mean somebody comes to your house and beats you up? Because it sounds like they're spamming you. And it's like, I can make an Outlook rule for this.
You can just like, report that as spam and you don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah. Furthermore, all data related to this and previous educational emails will be deleted after 12 months. They're not even going to keep it more than a year. The news comes as the original team behind Kick-Ass Torrents brought back the defunct site. News figure show Pirate Bay grew. According to Tech Times, the infamous nautical-themed torrent site is now the most popular one online. Figures from Alexia. So, yeah, DMCA takedown procedure on CatRC, similar to those used on Yahoo. New website also claims. So, they're going to send you emails if you're torrenting. Unless by educational email they mean something else, but it's like, we're going to send you an educational email. Delete. I have a delete key. I think I'll be fine. Just Am I missing something in this article?
No. Nope, it's crap. They're gonna send you a threatening letter. No, it has less force than a threatening letter, because a threatening letter involved somebody possibly writing or typing it, and then at least a human being delivering it to my house. They have a bot sending out letters. I have a spam filter.
Yeah, it's just like, what? Like, really?
Your bot sending my bot mail.
I'm going to send you an email. I'm going to send you spam. I already get spam. I have filters. It's fine.
Like, your bot and my bot can start corresponding. Our bots could become friends. I'm still ignoring all this shit.
Yep. Yeah, man, this is silly. So they could threaten you to take away your account or knock you off the internet or something. All right, last article. This one's just stupid.
They have a Reuters TV tax and can take away your TV. I wonder if they have an internet tax in Britain.
Not that I'm aware of, but I know they were counting computers as TVs. Your monitor counted as a TV, so that they could still charge you for.
For the TV
tax, even if you have, yeah.
Then they need to just revoke people's licenses. That would be something worth writing about.
So, last article up is from Reuters. China girlfriend rental app gets a leg up from Lunar New Year demand.
It's a porn app. You can rent you a hooker.
No, well, I don't. It might be hookers, but it's sillier than that. As millions in China head home to celebrate the Lunar New Year holiday with their families, 24-year-old Lulo is busy answering messages on a mobile app from desperate men looking to hire an instant girlfriend whom they can present to mom and dad. Visits home during the holidays, which kicks off on Friday, single people are often subjected to tough lectures from relatives keen on reinforcing the importance of marriage and securing the family bloodline. Some singles resort to hiring fake girlfriends and boyfriends to appease their parents. But an explosion... If this was just, hookups, it'd be different. But this is crazy. But an explosion in smartphone use in recent years means you can now pay for... means one can now pay for such a date through a handful of mobile apps with just a few clicks. Over 1,000 users on our platform have signed up for dates for hire for the New Year break. Cao Tineman, founder of Date for Hire app, Hire Me Please, told Reuters. Subscribers to the app can pay as little as 1 yuan, which is about 15 cents, to 1,999 yuan, or $300 an hour. $300 an hour for a dinner date, a chat, a game of Mahjong, or even a foot massage. I don't know, $300 an hour better be a hooker site. I mean,
it's ranging. The Mahjong and the foot massage, it's getting up there. But the happy ending, that's the $300 an hour.
Damn well better be. Prices surge around time of Lunar New Year with thousands of attractive 20-somethings like Lulo commanding fees of 3,000 yuan to 10,000 yuan a day. Your chick's making bank for going on bad dates. Shit. I'm still seeking people to fill my time slots, said the woman from the southwestern province of Sichuan, who has just two half-day slots left to fill over the next 7 days. But only those who stay in the same province as me. I don't have time to waste on travel, she added. How awkward would it be if, like, you had a brother? So you hired the girl, went home. Like, an hour later, your brother shows up with the same girl.
Wouldn't be an hour later. It's two different slots.
Oh, right,
days.
Right. Still.
Oh, but it could still be the same day. Think of how heartbroken your parents are going to be. They're going to need to break it to one of their children that they're dating a whore. No, that's amazing. Both of them should just play it up. I didn't know she was two-timing me. She said she liked the picture of me and my brother, and I thought we should all get to know each other. I wanted to introduce her to the family. My brother's an asshole. You need to give me his car.
apart from Hire Me Please, there are five major date hiring apps in China, which make their money by taking a cut from the hires. Business model still new since its launch in 2015. User base of 700,000 and 1.7 million followers on WeChat, China's biggest social network. Date rentals online or offline have drawn criticism in recent years, with some netizens, legal experts questioning the morality and the legality of the business. No clear prohibitions in Chinese law regarding date rentals, but risks exist to mention deals, and they violate laws to an extent, you know, especially if it's prostitution. Stax is not a part of the services offered by any of the mobile apps. Prostitution is illegal in China. Well, I mean, if it's a date and the date goes well, and, you know, paying the chick, Christ, 10,000 won, that's like $800. I mean, that's, you know, if you're paying her that much, that date better be fucking going well. So, actually, it's more than that. It's $1,500, something like that. Anyways, I mean, shit. Anyways, math. This is why I use calculators. There are no clear prohibitions. Where was I? Hiram Luskow said the initial aim of her app was to help overcome problems of loneliness experienced by young people leaving home to work alone in big cities. So, anyways. Oh, here we go. A dollar is 6.8 Chinese yuan. So just divide whatever it is by 7 there to get an approximation. So, a rent-a-friend platform plans to push out of first year. Rent-a-friend. That's fucked up, man. Well.
I don't know if it would work. I'm not sure there's a lot of chicks needing to fake a date, honestly. But if it is both genders, that's what Facebook's for. You get two people needing to, you know, trick their parents. Half a day at one, half a day at the other. You're both saving some money.
Well, not only that, I mean, you might actually start a real relationship, you know? I mean, shit. So. Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, how many marriages are based on lies?
Any more?
Oh, fuck.
So, anyways, moving on, I've got a couple of things for Digital Dojo, mostly just some online tools here. First is Simon.io. This thing's pretty cool. Open threat intelligence. Simon is the largest tracker of, or open tracker of malware, phishing, botnet, spam, and more. So, pretty much, they've got a whole bunch of stuff feeding into this database, and you can search it. You can add feeds to it. You can actually sign up and get feeds sent from it, so you can add it to your firewall. They're trying to sell their service by eSentry, so I think it's like set up to go into their DNS firewall system. But you can actually they're working on a Chrome plugin that can use it to block websites, like if you're going to a bad website right away. But if you're just trying to look up what's going on, or if you're not certain if something's really a phishing email or not, for example, IP, domain name, hash, like if you just copy the link, paste it in there, see if Simon comes back and says, yep, don't click that. So it's handy. It's a nice database to use, especially if people just aren't sure. The next one up is called Collector from the Tor project. And I don't know if I've covered this one before. I might have. But anyways, this is a whole bunch of different information that you can download about the Tor network. Probably the most useful one is the exit lists. So if you run a network and you think somebody might be running a Tor exit node, you can just look. You can just pull the recent exit list and see if any of your IPs are on there. Yeah, there's other things in here. Network status votes, bridge network statuses, hidden service descriptors. So, yeah. Pretty much, there's all kinds of information you can pull about the Tor network here on this website. I think this is good data to have. And you can even, they've even got information here about automating it with like dubget and writing scripts against this database so you can have things that keep up to date. Like if you write custom code against the Tor network. And it looks like they even have archives. So if you want to go back in time and see what was going on the Tor network, you might be able to do some of that. But yeah. Good stuff, especially if you're into playing around with Tor. And the final thing I have is something I'm probably going to be bastardizing at work, like a lot. is incidentresponse.com has a collection of example policies and plans for actually building an information security department in a company. So if you work for a company, you can compare some of these to existing policies to see if somebody's up to snuff, or if you actually get tasked with writing policies. They got a firewall policy, encryption policy, employee termination checkout procedures, email archiving or retention policy, just a starting point to get your company set up right so you can get the auditors to leave you the fuck alone. Incident handling. There's a fun one. Policy waiver request form. If nothing else, you can make some fun forms with this stuff to feed to your friends to scare them.
If the templates are actually decent, I wonder how much you could pull out of actual policy from that.
Probably quite a bit. In fact, the other thing about here is you know, incident reporting form, incident response plan. These policies are probably used as templates by a lot of departments. So not only could you use them to get your own up and going, it would give you an idea of what a lot of other people are doing. So for whatever reason you might need to know what the internet and email security policy of a company is, here's what one might look like. Or their patch management policy. Personnel security policy. I mean, it's interesting to see how companies are going to operate and how they're being recommended to operate, because if you needed to
socially engineer your way into a company
or be adversarial to one of these policies, say you were causing the incident and you wanted to see how they were going to respond to it. Not that I advocate such behavior. It's good to read. It's good day to have. There's other good stuff on this website too. So anyway, so that's the extent of what I have for Digital Dojo. Madman, do you have anything before I play the Pac-Man sound?
No, I don't, but we made an hour and 24 minutes, so full show.
Yeah, but we started late, so I think we're only at really about an hour. Something like that. Cycros came in like right after we started. When did he come in and say hi? Roll up through the chat log here. And when did he come in? He came in at 10 after, so we'll say we started at 10 hours. So, yeah, hour and 15, not bad. So, anyways, that's all I got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it, peer decking every Thursday. One of these days, I'm going to get around to actually fixing the website. And, of course, the subreddit is probably the best way to send us feedback. I do get messages on Reddit. I'm not going to promise to respond to them, but I do see them. I do read them. And yeah, that's all I've got for tonight. And